Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Night Shadows. I'm Stuart Best, where the paranormal is normal, where that which you thought you knew, you didn't, and where the future can be known if you know exactly where to look.
Well, good evening, everyone, and thanks for tuning in and listening. We're very honored to have Richard Shaw with us, who just came back from Israel and has some interesting things to tell us. And we have Larry with us, high up on his mountaintop. How are you doing, Richard?
Hi. Thanks a lot for having me on the show.
Oh, no problem.
Hi there.
Glad you could
make
it.
Thank you as well, Larry.
Yeah, Larry, how are you doing up there on the mountaintop?
Oh, I'm doing okay. I'm just really thrilled tonight to have Richard with us, and we can talk about some interesting stuff.
Yeah. Where should we start? Maybe let's roll out what Richard's up to these days, what he can tell us, what he can't tell us, and what's going on in Israel with the war. It seems to me like we have war coming very, very rapidly, and Larry's been keeping track of that, and I'm sure you have too, Richard, haven't been over there. How's the projects, or what can you reveal about your trip to Israel to our listeners?
Well, I've been doing some research and have a bunch of people in Israel that I'm working with, and I haven't really made any public announcement, and I haven't put anything up about what I'm doing on my website, but because a lot of it is confidential. But mm-hmm. What I can say is that through this process and talking with different archaeologists, there's some really amazing stuff going on over there that probably most people don't realize is taking place. And it was only like 2 or 3 weeks ago that I think it was the Times of Israel came out with an article that revealed some of this stuff that I already knew about and I already had pictures of. But what is interesting is the scope of what's going on over there. No, most people would have no idea of how huge this is. And maybe I could tell you about that in a little more detail, since they've already revealed it in the Times of Israel, that I have more information than what was in that article. But essentially, most people know that Jerusalem was destroyed by the Romans around 70 AD.
Mm-hmm.
And it was typical for civilizations back then, when they destroyed a city, to just bury the whole thing and build on top of it. And so what they're doing now is going back and going through that layer of dirt. I mean, I can't imagine that the process seems so gargantuan to do something like that, to bury a whole town. But that's kind of what Jerusalem's been destroyed and rebuilt several times. In fact, the walls that you currently see in Jerusalem now are only something like 476 years old. And most people don't know that. Yeah, because they were built by Suleiman the Great, who was a Turk that came in and rebuilt the walls. And so all of those big walls that you see, except for the Western Wall, are fairly new. I mean, they're not even 500 years old, which is like kind of like, of course, you know, to us in America, we think that America's been around forever since, you know, we're over 200
yeah.
years now, but that's like nothing.
Yeah, thousands of years in some of these places, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's why the first time I saw Jerusalem, when I first time I went there, I'm thinking, you know, no disrespect intended, but I'm thinking this looks like a big Disneyland attraction because the whole place was like so perfect looking, you know, and it was lit up at night and everything else, and it was beautifully manicured and plants and growing around it and the whole deal, and all of these stones are really cool looking at night, and I'm going, how can this be? Because back then I didn't realize the historical, you know, aspect of how it was rebuilt and, you know, who did it and who was responsible for it. But now what they're doing is going in there and digging out to find things. And what they've discovered is a huge section of the Western Wall that no one's ever seen.
Really?
And I went down and looked at it. And it's those massive stones that you always see in the Western Wall. But this is like underneath an area that was a wall leading into Jerusalem, and in you know, a couple thousand years ago, there was an archway there, and this is under that archway, and it's a huge room. It's enormous, and it was where people might have come in those days to sell animals for sacrifices, like where the money changers were kicked out. It's an area where they actually did that, and there was more than one of those areas, so we don't know if this is the one where Jesus went in with a whip and drove out the money changers. But I got to stand in a room that was very much like where he actually did that. And then if you go to East Jerusalem, people have been there, well, know that there's this town. In fact, it's in the Torah Code video. If you haven't seen that, you can see it in that. But it's called Silwan. And Silwan is a city that's, oh, maybe 40% Arabs and or 40% Jewish and 60% Arabs living side by side in these little homes that kind of hang out of the cliffs.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the old city from Silwan because it's kind of, it's up like on a mountain, kind of a hill. And you can take these little roads and drive up there, which we did, which I've done that before. It's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And but underneath a portion of that town, they're doing this enormous excavation. And I can't describe it other than it being incredibly impressive, because when they took me down there underground, and it's under people's homes and stuff that live in the area, there's this massive tunnel that's been fortified with steel girders and walls and archways underground. There were guys down there when I was there welding on it. So it's like, it looks like you've just entered a set for a 007 movie. You know, it's just like you're expecting, you know, the ding 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 ding. These guys are welding on the walls, and there's these steps, and there's these hundreds of bags of dirt that are motorized on a trolley that are being basically powered out of the area as they're digging down underground there and looking for artifacts.
Wow.
And they pulled a piece of plywood off the floor and then a piece of rubber under that and pointed to this coin that was embedded in the floor. And I said, why is that important? And they told me, because this coin was minted in 68 AD and hasn't moved since. And it's helped to date this area so that they know that it was part of the Roman conquest.
Mm.
And there's the proof of it. So the steps we were walking on looked almost new, and yet they were made 2,000 years ago or even older than that, maybe 2,100 years. And they said, well, these are the steps that Jesus walked on. And I said, well, how can you possibly know that? And they said, because this is the only way in those days he would have been able to go from Jerusalem to the Mount of Olives. And so we were walking on them. And what was interesting was that it had a curb that seemed very contemporary to me. It had a square opening in the floor that you could lift up. And it was an ancient manhole cover. And if you went down in there, there was a flood control system under that. And the way they built these towns were they had these, I don't know how to describe it, other than you could almost stand up in it, and they were probably, maybe 4 or 5 feet wide and almost tall enough to stand up in, almost. And that would be built under the city before the roads were put in. So it's kind of like what we do with sewer systems today, where you lay big pipes under the streets and then you pour the asphalt. Well, that's how they did those cities, except they really built them. I mean, these things were made out of stone, and they look the same now as they did 2,000 years ago. And they basically excavated the thing out. And, I mean, if there was water directed into them, they would probably still work just fine, which is really crazy when you consider the age of the whole system. But underneath the western wall, there was a guy with a pickaxe chipping away underground in a shaped area that looked just like that. And I asked our archaeologist, I said, are you thinking what I'm thinking, that there's a network of all of these things underneath the whole city? And he said, yeah, we're beginning to see that there's like all of this works, and it's underground, and it's this is how the city was made, and now we're just rediscovering where all of this flood control system was.
It's
really fascinating.
Wow.
And then there was this guy that they said, oh, you've got to meet this Arab shop owner. And I said, why? And he said, because he's this is a really funny story, and I don't think I'm revealing any secrets here. But, you know, Jerusalem has all sorts of security cameras. There's a no-fly zone around Jerusalem. You can't even start a drone to take any overhead pictures or anything like that, because it's, like, protected. So at night, they see this guy, and he's got, like, a bobcat or something similar to that. If you guys know what a bobcat is, it's like a little tractor with a digger on it. And, you know, he owns this shop in the Jerusalem Mall. And if you've ever been to Jerusalem, there's you kind of go into this mall area, and there's a walkway that's stone, and then there's shops on both sides, and it's all covered. Well, sometimes there's shops that have, you're like out on a patio or a terrace, and you can enter the shops from the outside without having to go through the inner part of the mall. Well, this guy had a shop that you could get in from the outside, and so the security cameras were seeing that this guy was carrying out big mountains of dirt from his building. And I said, what the heck was he doing? He said he had busted through the back wall of his shop to enlarge it because he wanted to build a restaurant. And he owns the shop. It's been in his family for decades. So I said, okay. So, you know, where all this dirt come from? So, well, he actually discovered an ancient set of archways that the Crusaders built in 1200 AD.
Wow.
And they said, you got to see this. So they took me over there, and I was just amazed. I mean, the place looked new because it was all stone, and just doesn't erode. It just stays the same for thousands of years. And they cleaned it all out. They removed all the dirt. They put a beautiful tile floor in. And here's these Crusader period arches. Beautifully, impeccably built. It would make a fantastic restaurant to eat in because you'd have all of this around you. It's just totally historical. But then he said, oh, and you have to see this. And he starts lifting up this little secret trap door in the floor. And there's a ladder going down there. And I'm going, okay. Now this is down the rabbit hole, you know, essentially. I didn't bring any underground lighting equipment with me or anything like that. This was basically, I wasn't expecting this. So we all crawled down there. And there was a whole other set of Crusader arches and dirt that hadn't totally been excavated yet. And
wow,
an amazing set of rooms underground that no one knew was there. And this kind of discovery just is like an everyday thing now. And there's,
wow,
what most people don't know is there's like over, there's something like 100 excavations going on right now in Jerusalem. And depending on what they are, there's bunches of people working on it. There's this, everything's meticulously researched and categorized and put in little boxes. And I mean, it's just, they're just discovering stuff constantly. And they feel like it's important for them to do that. And of course, the Jewish mind, I'm learning, like, my Jewish friends are, they're such sticklers for detail, you wouldn't believe it. I mean, if you ask them a question and they don't know the answer to it, this is the same, this is true of my Torah code friends, too. They will study it to the nth degree to find the answer.
Huh.
And so this particular excavation that's going on now, this massive, all of these excavations that are occurring in Jerusalem are, to me, they're unprecedented. I've never seen anything like it. There's kind of an urgency that they have to find their heritage, and they're finding all sorts of stuff. It's really spectacular.
Now, does all the digging and whatnot, I remember I subscribed to Vendel Jones's newsletter, he discovered a lot of stuff, but is that all under the Antiquities Department, all of the control functions?
Well, that depends on the area. Now, the Israel Antiquities Authority, or the IAA, is led by a director general who I met, and he's a great guy, and if you want to dig up a road or put a building in, you have to have the IAA's approval to do something like that. You know, and even if you want to build a contemporary building somewhere, they have to make sure that there's nothing, you know, buried down there that might be valuable before you get permission. So not only do they have the authority to do excavations and archaeological work, but it even extends beyond that to just the day-to-day normal stuff that goes on to make a city run.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot going on there. So Vendel Jones worked in more than one location. There's caves underneath the Temple Mount. Most people know that. There's caves that run under the city of Jerusalem. There's a lot of caves. Not even sure where they all go. There's also caves in Qumran, and you guys probably know of Aaron Judkins. He's been to Peru twice with us.
Yeah,
he's an archaeologist, and Aaron was he worked with one of the archaeologists just in Qumran just earlier this year, where they discovered another Dead Sea Scroll. And what they discovered was in a cave that was basically, it was titled Cave 53, and it was upgraded, and now it's called Cave 12 because they actually found stuff in it. And what they found was, this may not seem all that important to most people, but it was a 3-inch by 7-inch piece of rolled up unprinted parchment in a little leather pouch, and then there were ancient tools in the same cave, and all of these things had to be documented by the IAA. Someone has to come out with their little book and write notes and description of each little thing that was found, and it's dusty, dirty work, but they actually found the cave where they think there were some Jewish guys 2,000 years ago that had a business making mezuzahs. And some of the caves in the Qumran area years ago they found with hundreds of little oil lamps, and that's how they lit the place up while they were working. And that stuff is sometimes found. And this is the caves in Qumran is where the Copper Scroll was found back in 1952. And the Copper Scroll is a very interesting discovery.
Yes.
But Wendell Jones was an explorer that's gotten a lot of credit for the work he's done. But what most people don't know is he also worked with other archaeologists. So it wasn't just him by himself.
Mm-hmm.
He worked with other people as well, but his daughter is still alive, and I think she has siblings as well. There's other people that I haven't spoken to, but I have talked to Sarah Richards, who is Wendell's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She lives on the West Bank, and I found her very fascinating to talk to. She had so much interesting stuff to say, and knew about the discoveries they'd found. So basically they had looked into the Copper Scroll, and it said, well, there should be the anointing oil should be here, and the ketoret, or which is the incense, should be in this cave. And, it, of course, it's not worded that easily. It's a combination of ancient Aramaic and Hebrew that had to be completely translated. But sure enough, they dug down in this one cave, and there was the anointing oil. And a few years later, they came back. I don't know why it takes so long. It's not incredibly expensive to do one of these excavations, but in the cave that they thought that the incense might be in, they thought might also be the same cave that could have the ashes of the red heifer, which some of these terms aren't going to be familiar to some of your listeners, but essentially the ashes of the red heifer were Moses' own cow that, according to the law in those days of the early Torah, you would sprinkle the ashes and purified water to cleanse yourself before you could enter the temple, tabernacle. So that has been a problem, not having that, because it had to come from a cow that was all red hair on the cow.
Yes.
The red heifer was, it's a genetically difficult thing, and they're actually trying to breed cows right now that are pure without any other colors, because they're trying to go back to tradition to do this again. But if they found the ashes of the red heifer, I mean, it would be monumental.
Yes.
I never thought it would be such a big thing, but if that was ever found, it would be huge. And that could signal the actual reconstruction of the Third Temple. I have a feeling that's what would happen.
Yes.
But
well, they got
anyway,
the
I was just going to say that Wendell Jones, along with a couple other archaeologists, found the cave that the ketoret was in, and the ketoret is the incense that was used by the high priest in the days when they were in the Sinai, and basically he would go into the Holy of Holies once a year burning this incense. And they dug out thousands of tons of rock that was sealing this cave up, went underground, busted through a stone enclosure, and when they lifted the lid off of it, there was the incense, and it was a lot of it, liters of it.
Wow.
And when they first saw it, it was red, and they thought they'd found the ashes of the red heifer. In fact, what Vendel goes, "We found the ashes of the red heifer," not realizing it was actually the Ketoret that he found.
Mm-hmm.
But the Ketoret has been stored, and so there's a lot of skepticism about it. Even though it's been checked out, it has three different kinds of cinnamon in it. It has like 11 or 12 ingredients. In scripture, it said that if the person that's making the incense leaves out one ingredient, he's to be put to death.
Yeah, that was serious business.
It's very serious stuff, and I've seen it. I've smelled of it. It has a very faint smell of cinnamon. It's there's three different kinds of cinnamon in it. And they believe that the anointing oil was made from the Ketoret in those days, that they would press the Ketoret and oil would come out with enough pressure.
Huh.
And they used the same materials to make the anointing oil for the high priest that they used to burn when they were going into the Holy of Holies. Now, you have to understand that in those early days, which really went on for a very brief period of time compared to, you know, what we think of, because the Ark of the Covenant and all of that disappeared when Nebuchadnezzar came in, and no one had seen it since. But when they were out in the wilderness, the way it's described is that the Holy of Holies had this pillar of cloud, and that the ark sat in the Holy of Holies, which was like a small back end part of the tabernacle that they built, and the tabernacle was portable. It had wooden walls that were overlaid in gold. It had rods that pushed through openings, through holes through these walls, so they could easily put it together and disassemble it. Now, what's interesting is that the walls were roughly in 4-foot wide sections and were probably a few inches thick.
Mm-hmm.
And they drilled perfect holes through those walls so that you could slide rods through them. Now, that today would even be difficult.
Yes, very.
To make a hole that perfect so that stuff, you know, it didn't jam when you're trying to fit a rod through it, but then it would go through perfectly and all of that, so it could be disassembled easily. And the walls were coated in gold, and so the ark was gold, the walls were gold. The high priest walks in there with all of this special garb on. He had the ephod, which was like an apron, and then he had a breastplate on that, and he had the Urim and Thummim. He had pomegranate bells on the hem of his garment. They tied a rope around his leg in case he accidentally touched the ark and died. And so when he enters this Holy of Holies, it's like this brilliantly lit, super reflective environment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never been really described like that. You don't
really
hear about that. But the more you you research this, there was energy in there. There has to be a reason, not just to show off how much gold Israel has, which was probably taken from the Egyptians, but we think there was a purpose to it, that it was actually shielding to protect the children of Israel from the ark. Some people think the ark was radioactive. Some people believe that the pillar of cloud, if you got too close to just that, it would be deadly because of the amount of energy emanating from it. Other people believe that what they called the mercy seat, which was the part with the two angels, the cherubims, the angels that, you know, when you watch Raiders of the Lost Ark, it's kind of like this super modern view of the Ark where their wings are kind of like super streamlined and touching each other. It almost looks like something you would have seen from like the 30s Art Deco period. That's what it reminds me of. But if you go to the Temple Reconstruction Institute in Jerusalem and you look at their facsimile of the Ark, it looks totally different.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, what cracked me up about it was that the angels were big and their wings were flared up. So it was tall and menacing looking. It's not this real streamlined arc. It was like a little scary looking. And what I thought was really strange was that the angels, to me, had a very alien appearance to them.
Huh.
Now these are the ones that the guys made to try to, you know, make them look like cherubs. But they, you know, more and more we're looking at who were these angels, what did they look like, where did they come from? And I think today if we looked at them with modern eyes, we'd go, oh, well, you know, they're not from here. You know, it's like, because you have all of these interesting stories about Lot and the two angels that appeared, and a lot of these angels had powers and abilities. They had ways of, you know, suddenly getting really bright and emanating lots of light, or they could kind of knock people out and make them go unconscious so they could do what they needed to do. You read about this clear into the New Testament. It's not just an Old Testament phenomenon, but it goes on. And knowing what we know now about aliens that people have actually say they've met, it's very similar, except these angels aren't abducting people against their will and doing terrible things to their bodies. And we're getting off on another topic here, which is very paranormal, but I believe that it's real. I've talked to enough people that are really smart individuals, including Captain Robert Salas, people that have been in charge of actually our nuclear warheads in Montana, that's been abducted. I don't think I would consider that guy a nutcase. He has too much responsibility. And speaks about it very matter-of-factly, like this is what happened to him. So we've been visited in our lifetime, and I believe that we're about to start seeing possibly more of that, including the preponderance of camera shots of UFOs all over the world is increasing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, yeah.
With that, I'll shut up for a minute. Sorry about
going what I was curious about,
it
now that you
all
brought
these
it up.
Are connected.
Yeah, they are. I was going to say the timeline and the way they are going after all the ancient artifacts in Israel, and when you combine that with the timeline and the UFOs, it all seems to tie together that we are really right at the door of major discoveries.
Yeah, I think we are.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was agreeing with you. I'm just saying, you know, NASA has come out saying there's this Planet Nine out there. I mean, this is something they would have never mentioned or talked about in the past. And so now we've got all these people saying they've seen two suns. And I've looked at this footage. Every single example I've seen that has been sent to me by credible sources, I look at it and analyze it, and it's internal lens flares.
That's what I think,
and
yes.
I wish, you know, it's... And there's reasons, I have very good reasons for believing that's the case. One is that I've done tests myself with solar filters and without, with different cameras, with, you know, pieces of glass in front of the lens, without the piece of glass, you know, with cell phones, with DSLRs, with video cameras, and I get different results from all of them. Mm-hmm. And the cell phone, they have real problems when you shoot them at the sun. Now, you can go out right now with your iPhone and shoot the sun directly with nothing in front of the lens, and it may just show the sun with kind of a glow around it. But under certain conditions, if you're shooting through a car window or an airplane window or anything where you have glass in front of the lens, it can create all sorts of weird anomalies. And,
mm-hmm.
and the thing that mostly what we see is you'll see in these two sun videos, which happens constantly, habitually, you'll see the sun, and then you'll see a bright spot off to the left that's also extremely bright. Everybody says it's Nibiru, and it's not.
Yes.
And the way you can tell is by, and I've even wrote Marshall Masters, who's really into the whole Planet X thing and has been for years, and who's a really smart guy and a good friend of mine. And I said, here's how I look at these things to know whether they're real or not. I take the footage and I speed it up. And if the second sun is moving around and shifting position, then it's fake. Because if it was a real planet, it wouldn't be oscillating or moving in a period of 15 or 20 seconds. It's just not going to happen.
Yes, that's right.
And also, if the planet is like semi-transparent, then it's not a planet. It obviously is some sort of weird reflection, you know, because, I mean, it baffles me because we know what the moon looks like. It doesn't look like that. That's a real planet. We see it all the time, right? So anything that's real is going to look like that. And there is a passage in the Zohar that says, in the time of Mashiach, there will be this multicolored planet and its orbiting satellites appear in the heavens and will be seen by everyone on Earth for 7 months. That's what it says in the Zohar. And then Jesus in Matthew 24 says, and then there will be, at the tribulation period, the sign of the coming of the Son of Man, and all the earth shall mourn. Well, I mean, that to me is in some sort of astronomical event.
Yes.
And it agrees with the Jewish mystical text explanation. So,
yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, I mean, we're not at that point yet, but I think we're close.
I was going to ask
Let me ask you.
Go ahead, Larry.
I was just going to ask you, Richard, you know, you commented on some type of arrival or you know, the so-called angels or fallen ones or whatever. I was going to ask you because I've watched a number of the Watchers series, and I absolutely enjoyed every single thing you did with Roger Lear, Dr. Roger Lear, and he was just phenomenal. And I do know that some, you said, continued some of that work. What was Roger's last feelings about where the phenomena with the implants and such as that, where did that, what was his feelings on the, towards the end there? And also, do the ones that are working a little further down the road from where he stopped, do they have any direction that seems to lead them in another direction, or where are we going with the implants and things such as that?
Well, that's a loaded question because there's a lot to talk about. And for those who don't know who Roger Lear was, he was the world's leading authority on alien implants. And when you first hear that, to the uninitiated, that sounds like total, you know, complete and utter baloney. But, and I was even skeptical. The first time I met Roger was in the fall of 2010. And L.A. Marzulli said, we got to go meet Roger. I said, I'm trying to remember, who's Roger again? Now, I know I'd seen him on television and documentaries before that, but I didn't really know that much about him. He said he's the world expert on alien implants. He's spoken in 41 countries on the phenomena. He's done all sorts of research, and he's a doctor. I said, okay. And so I'm really open-minded with this stuff. You know, it's like just because I haven't studied it doesn't mean it's not real. So I went to meet this guy, and he hands me an implant, puts it in my hand. And it was in a little plastic vial, and you could see it inside, surrounded by a viscous kind of solution to keep it from degrading. And then he started showing us electron microscope and EDX analysis of what these implants are made out of. He had so much scientific data, it was just, you couldn't ignore it. It was like, okay, there's something to it. And then there's all these people that have had really strange experiences, missing time. Suddenly they find something under their skin that I don't remember how it got there. They would have it removed, and there'd be this strange metallic object that's putting out radio waves and would, you know, make a Gauss meter move, and you could find it with a stud finder, and it was putting out radio waves and all of this stuff, measurable stuff with scientific gear. You could just take measurements. And so we did that in Watcher 7 and 8 and tested all that stuff. And at that point, I was completely convinced. Well, one thing that you're asking of, how does Roger feel towards the end of his life about it? Well, he was very much a scientist, and Roger was Jewish. And I didn't realize all this thing about Roger until we became really close towards the end of his life. He'd come over to my house, we'd talk for an hour. You know, it'd just be like, he always had interesting stuff to talk about, and he was really brilliant. And we would discuss all sorts of the whole artifacts, the UFOs, and what they are and what's going on with it, and alien abductions and all of that. And then you get into people that give you really crazy stories that you have to really analyze whether they're real or not. But then when you take these same people that seem like they're not very credible, and you x-ray them, and there's these metallic objects behind each of their ears and in their center of their brain, you have to go, okay, this is a physical thing that's actually in these people. They're not making this story up, as crazy as it sounds. This is really in there, and there it is. So there's something to it. And I've talked to people that have implants in behind both ears and in other places. And I said, why do you think that there's so many of them, that they put so many of them in you? And they said, it's because they're experiencing through my senses what's going on, meaning that they're listening to our discussion right now. And at that point, it became like really creepy. It's like, oh, man, you know, it's like... And then we know, like, there's these things that can happen that seems to defy physical laws. And this is what I think turned Roger around, because the last implant removal surgery that we filmed was Roger's 17th surgery. He'd taken out 17 alien implants in his career over a period of years. This last one, we documented every step of it. We did a CAT scan. We did, you know, 4 x-rays. We did, we used Gauss meter tests. We did the Home Depot stud finder, and it lit up. We did, you know, a frequency counter to find out if it was putting out. All those things reacted to it. And, I mean, you can't just put these things on a normal, this guy had an implant just below his knee on his leg. So if you put all of those devices on your knee, say, that doesn't have an implant, they wouldn't do anything. They'd just say zero, right?
Uh-huh.
With this guy, he was getting like almost 7 milligauss of magnetic field coming out of this thing in his knee. It was generating that, a flux density, only 3 milligauss less than my Canon camera that I was using to shoot the project, which has a lithium-ion battery in it, a large one. Now, this is emanating from a device that's about 6 millimeters long and the width of a pencil lead, and it's doing that. Now, how is it getting energy to do that, and why is it doing that? And there's certain norms that we learned. Well, when we went in to get it removed, it disappeared. We couldn't find it. It didn't come up in ultrasound scans. It just wasn't there. So we got out the rest of the test equipment. We got out the old Home Depot stud finder, which just looks for metallic objects. It registered a metallic object everywhere we put it. Its readings were useless. We couldn't tell where the thing was. So then we tried the Gauss meter, and it read zero. And then we used this super multi-thousand-dollar device, ultrasound machine that the doctor had, Dr. Matriciano had in the little surgical room. And we went over the same spot where we knew the implant had just been a week earlier, and we couldn't find it. Now, before we found it like in a minute and a half, it was easy. But, oh, there it is right there. You could see it. This time we were there 45, 50 minutes, nothing. It would not show up. And so L.A. prayed that whoever's cloaking this thing would stop doing that so we could get on with our business. And as I'm shooting the screen with my camera, it just dissolves into frame. Now, I'm not kidding. That's just exactly how it happened. I'm telling you the actual truth. I saw it with my own eyes. I was there to experience it. Once we prayed, it became active again. And the ultrasound machine could see it. So then we went in there with a scalpel and removed it. And at that point, Roger realized there was a supernatural component to the whole UFO phenomena that can't be ignored. Otherwise, you're only getting part of the picture.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, in other words, the Lord uncloaked it, which means that this is probably fallen angel high technology?
Yeah, it is. I believe that's what it is. And this is the other problem we have. We use terminology like fallen angels because that's what the Old Testament calls them.
Mm-hmm.
And so to the skeptical, anti-religious, atheistic person, oh, fallen angels, great. So they have this kind of like this mental image of these angels falling out of the sky, which is really ridiculous. And you lose all credibility. And fallen angels could mean, we don't know exactly. Fallen means that they came from above and fell to earth. Now, how they did that, we have no idea. Did they do that physically? Well, they're part physical and they're part spiritual. I don't know, you know. Or did they come down some kind of a ship? I think that could have very well been the case.
Well, a lot
and
of
they
the
came
ancients,
down quick.
A lot
yeah,
of the ancients like, talked
ancient
about that.
Times is, yeah. So it's like, why is that so hard to believe? So, okay, so we had aliens who were evil ended up on the Earth and create all sorts of dastardly problems, the giants and all that stuff from intermarriage. And yet this is something else. But we know that they had some ability to manipulate matter and time because they just know how to do that. So we have to go, okay, well, we're really stupid, and we haven't learned how to do that yet. There are physical laws. We don't understand how they work. But even Einstein believed that there is no such thing as matter, and it's all a matter of frequency and vibration and you know, and Tesla thought the same thing, that it's all a matter of resonant frequencies and vibrations. And I think that we're just now realizing that, but we don't know how to use it properly yet.
Mm-hmm. Which would
bring in
levitation stuff.
Well, yeah, and they're also saying that, that currently all of our music is keyed to is 440 hertz,
mm-hmm.
which is more of an industrial age decision. And it was something like in olden times, it was 432 hertz was A.
Mm.
And what's interesting is, you know, these plates that you can, they have these, there's a name for them that, heaven help me, I can't remember what they're called, but essentially you have this plate, you can attach it to a speaker voice coil, and you can put a sweep oscillator and amplify the sound, and it makes this whole plate hum at the same frequency that you're feeding the speaker, okay? And then you can pour rice on it, you know, like uncooked, the hard rice kernels on that, and the rice will dance around and form patterns. This is all over YouTube. You can easily pull it up and look at it. And what happens is it forms interesting patterns at different frequencies. And at 432, the shape of the pattern is more smooth and defined. And when you go to 440, it becomes a lot more pointy and weirder looking. And we don't know how those frequencies are affecting us. It's because we're creatures of sound, of auditory nerves and all of that stuff. We're affected by frequencies and the way all this stuff works in ways that we're just now determining. And there's also water that's affected by frequency. You guys know that. I mean, they've done experiments where water forms various shapes based on what music's playing in the room. It seems to take on various emotional content. It's really bizarre, but it actually is that way. That's a fact. It's a scientific, provable fact that water does this. And now they're working with water, they call it structured water, where they're trying to transmit information into water and then reproduce it on the other end. And if they're able to do that, that's going to be incredible. So it's like we don't know anything, essentially.
Yeah, right.
The problem is
actually,
the scientific community has become like a cult. And if you go into areas that they don't sanction, then you can get fired from your job or you can get ostracized from the community. And it's almost like, well, who cares, except for the fact that everybody wants a paycheck. And that's really, it all boils down into who gets paid for their work or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the beginning was the word, and that, of course, is audible. It's a frequency.
Right, exactly.
And I guess we're finding out. I know there was a German scientist, Schwarzberger or something like that, who was using sound for his UFO anti-gravity stuff. So do you suppose that they were using sound? I'm sure you've heard about this guy down in Florida long ago, built, what they call it, Coral Castle?
Oh, yeah, the Coral Castle. I've been there.
What did you think about that?
He was able to move really large slabs of this coral rock himself with no help. And he had some kind of a motor, but there's still parts of it in a little shop that you can go look at. And it looks like one of those magnetic motors that are self-propelling, like they like can continue to spin once you get them started. And apparently he was using that to grind and cut this coral, because it was way out in the sticks where he was working. He didn't have power out there. And he did this decades ago. And they weren't even sure how he made his tools. It's very mysterious. But he did a lot of his work at night when people couldn't see. But yet he still had, like, I mean, I saw a couple chain hoists and things like that. So he might have used some conventional tools to move this stuff. But the motor thing, to me, looked like one of those perpetual motion machines that people are building now using magnets and stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of
weird. Yeah, Richard, I was going to bring up right there, when you and L.A. went to, I think it was Peru, and y'all went to where they had these massive stones. I think L.A. said at one time that he thought maybe that those stones were moved by sound or frequency and maybe even shaped. Is that accurate?
Well, yeah. I mean, Brian Forrester took us to the Temple of the Sun in Ollantaytambo, and I was really intrigued with the walls there, and also in another town called a place called Coricancha, and he basically had this really hard stone, which is andesite. And andesite that they were using had veins of quartz running through it, which gave the rock piezoelectric qualities. But what was interesting is that they had rows of perfectly level openings that didn't go anywhere. They had basically they were like holes that were trapezoidal shaped into these walls, but the holes didn't go all the way through the wall. They had like a flat panel in the back of them that was stone. And I looked at it and I said, this has to be for sound, because I can't imagine what practical purpose this would have. And so I stuck my head in one and started humming really loud, and it got at one frequency, it got really loud, so everybody else had to do it. I said, "Well, wait, let me record this." So then I was the guy that started all of that, because as soon as I saw it, I thought, "Oh, this is some kind of a thing." So I told Professor Herlich about it. I said, "What do you think that is?" He said, "It's a waveguide." Immediately, that came out of his mouth. He believed that it was some sort of something to amplify sound or to get it to do something interesting. But also, I'm thinking the reason it doesn't work today is because the Earth got knocked off its axis. When they were building all of this stuff, it was pre-flood.
Yes.
And the Earth was in harmony and running at an axis of 0 degrees, and now we're at 23 degrees off axis. So all of the magnetic lines of force going through the Earth are now in a different place than they were. And I discussed this with LA. I said, I think they were using these buildings as some kind of communications device that they were able to maybe even stick their head in one of those openings and talk to somebody across the other side of the world, because these things were lined up. I think that actually was the way it is, because piezoelectric is how our microphones, some of them, work. Basically, all of that means is that a piezoelectric device is something that it'll either work where it's picking up vibrations and it turns that into electrical energy, or you can squeeze it or move it and it will generate electricity, or you can send electricity into it and the reverse happens. And so these are buildings built out of that material. I mean, so we've never tried that. I don't know what would happen.
Well, it seems probably very ancient technology, but it's really well in advance of anything we probably know.
Oh, it's incredibly high tech, and yet it looks ancient. So the average dude looks at that now and goes, oh, great looking wall. What's for lunch? You know, and they don't understand. They don't understand the impact of it. I mean, it's what I always wanted to do. I bought a little app for my iPhone, and it's basically a sweep oscillator. It has this neat little interface, and you can, it's like, okay, I want a sine wave or triangle wave or square wave, you know, and then you can dial in what frequency you want it to emanate at, and it has like a little thumb wheel where you can twirl your hand on the iPhone screen, and, you know, you can make it go, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And I have these portable speakers that are really powerful. They're like Anker speakers, and they run off of a big battery inside, and they have really powerful amplifiers. You can use them as an outdoor PA system. And I always wanted to grab one of those next time I went to Peru, to that area, to Cusco or someplace like that, and stick one of those speakers in one of those openings, because I don't need power to do that. Plug it into my phone and try letting it play really loudly into one of those openings and see what frequency jumps out and see if anything happens. I'm really curious. Oh. If I ever get to go back there, I'm going to do it for sure, because I want to see if one frequency gets really loud. And I'm sure it will. I'm sure one frequency will, like, be the resonant frequency. And what if you left it sit there for a minute? What would happen? I don't know.
Yeah, well what's interesting, Richard, is there are some shamans that apparently have been told, and matter of fact, Steve Quayle's and Tom Horn's investigation, even some of the elders, Native American elders, say that are familiar with Stargate, so to speak, and have released some of that information recently. They say that tones or frequencies are used, and they know the ones to use to open these gateways. So, Richard, if you go to that place and you turn the right frequency on, we may never hear from you again. You'll step out somewhere else.
Yeah, just disappear. Yeah, that would be cool, as long as it was a place I want to be. I mean, maybe they had some kind of teleportation through one of these stargates. I don't know. I mean, there's very mysterious things going on in the Earth. There seem to be, and people have said, that there's various portals, areas in the Earth that still exist today. And now they're finding out all the stuff about Antarctica. Like, there's some 91 volcanoes under Antarctica. Did you hear that?
Yeah. Yes.
And
what's
one of them is 15,000 feet tall.
Wow.
Well, I don't think we have a clue as to what's really buried under there. But the bots of Cliff High.
That's why they think the ice is melting.
Yes. Underneath. Yep. The volcanic
activity
is melting.
Getting warm under Antarctica. It's not global warming. It's basically that there's something going on under the ground, that the Earth is changing. It's going through a metamorphosis, and it's going to get really weird and really strange and interesting. And yet we've got all these indictments going on for people with sexual issues in D.C. and in Hollywood, and also there's guys getting arrested in Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia has told their people to leave Lebanon now, like we were discussing earlier. And it's like, man, I just can't keep up with all the craziness that's going on in the world. And then there's other people saying that we're actually on a different kind of dollar right now, but it hasn't been announced, that it's basically we're gold-backed. It's going to be the USN, the United States note. It won't say Federal Reserve note on it anymore. And this is because Trump is doing all this cool stuff and nobody knows about it yet. And this is all going to come out. But to me, it's like, well, that sounds like completely conspiratorial and all of that to most people. Because we have a biblical worldview on many of these issues, something massive has to happen to introduce the whole Antichrist character, the whole Mark of the Beast thing, and all of that. There has to be something really incredible happen, and only if there's a massive shakeup in the monetary system do I believe that that's going to happen. And it's going to, it could happen like overnight. Suddenly it's like, you know, the dollar isn't worth nearly as much as it once was, or it's gold back and actually worth more physically than it has before, or there's could be other forms of international currencies could take on greater value, like the Iraqi dinar or the Vietnamese dong or the Iranian rial. And some people have said the Zim. The Zim is the one I have the biggest trouble believing, because it's just such, there's such huge amounts. I can't imagine how that would work. But there's supposed to be some kind of currency revaluation, and it sounds incredible and ridiculous. And yet we know that these things have to happen, and we don't know how they're going to happen.
What's her name from the IMF? It said a number of times that we're going to have a reset, and a global reset, So, yeah, it's coming. It's just a question, I guess, of when they want to do it. And now we're seeing a developing triad.
You get on Drudge Report, and they're talking about brain implants, chip implants in people's brain. That was just in there today. You know, and it's like, you know, to get rid of old unwanted memories and to also connect yourself to the internet without using a smartphone or anything like that, you could think your way into getting whatever information you want. And a lot of people, I'm sure, would want to try that, you know, to see if it actually works. And then they're, you know, talking about more robots being used and self-driving vehicles. And I mean, it's just like, things are really getting weird. I mean, it's just really,
it's like the technology is way ahead of our minds, you know, our ability to use it.
Well, it is. I mean, I had problem with my Mac not working. I mean, I would go through a system update, and I have a good Apple. I have a Mac Pro. It's lovingly called the Trash Can Mac. It's got four processors running at 3.7 gigahertz, and it's really insanely fast. I need it for my video editing. But what would happen is I would do a system upgrade, and it would lock my internal hard drive, so I couldn't get at my applications. It would not let me unlock them, which is really a big problem, because then it causes the programs that have to access the drive to not have permission to do that, so then they freeze or crash. So I got on the phone with Apple, and we worked on it for 2 hours. And he finally gave me like a string of a command string. I mean, here we are down in the machine language here, typing commands into single user mode in Unix, trying to fix my Mac. But the only reason I mentioned that, I put this one string in that they sent me and emailed me, and then he said, try it while I'm on the phone with you. So I'm doing this. And, you know, if you don't have a Mac, you don't know what I'm talking about. But there's something called single user mode, and you can do file system checks from that when you boot your Mac, which will test your internal hard drive for errors and all that. And it's really, really nice thing to do, but it's a little computer techie for most people. But when I typed in this command string and hit return, my screen just immediately started flowing with thousands of lines of code. It just was, I've never seen anything like it in my life.
Huh.
It was just like all of this program language was just scrolling by at breakneck speed. It was just breathtaking, and it went on for several minutes as it's resetting everything on my hard drive so that it would work again. And I said, this is just wild. And he said, well, actually, every time you're doing something on your Mac, this is what's really happening in the background. You just don't see it.
Huh. Yeah.
All of these commands are flowing by. That's why you need really fast CPUs and why all of that is necessary, because all of these commands are happening every time you do something.
Well,
what did you... Go ahead. I was just going to mention, Richard, I guess you heard about the AI, artificial intelligence, computer stuff that they began to use, and it started talking to itself, each other, the AI, one AI to another, to each other in a language they could not even understand or decipher. Did you hear about that, and they had to shut it down?
Yes, I did, and what was interesting, like... there was this restaurant we went to, and I was sitting at the bar while I was waiting for a friend to come up there and getting like a Arnold Palmer, which is like a iced tea lemonade kind of thing. And she goes, oh, I can't believe these two computers that were talking to each other. So even she had heard about that. You know, I was just like, Persistence, California, everybody's totally into this technology stuff. And this is the land of Apple and, you know, Intel and all of that, but they realized that the human language was too cumbersome. So they're, because of their artificial intelligence programming, they started rewriting their own language so they could talk to each other faster.
Huh.
And at a certain point, it was getting weird, and they had to shut them down. And this actually happened from what I read. I don't think it's a hoax. I think this is actually, that's actually occurred. But it reminded, we were saying this is just like Skynet from the Terminator.
Yeah.
Where all of the, everything got so intelligent that it basically said, what do we need humans for anymore? Let's just do this ourselves. But they have no way of, there's no conscience there. There's no anything, but you know, it's the whole idea too of nanotechnology. That's Kurzweil's big thing, and you know, nanotechnology scares me more than artificial intelligence, because nanotechnology is at the atomic level and there's no way to stop it. At a certain point, everything, they say, they call it gray goo. You know, it's like if it goes out of whack, then it's going to create all sorts of weird stuff. But it's almost like Star Trek technology, like something could form on your desk out of thin air, and actually it would be these nanobots building something. And since they're at the atomic level, you don't see them doing it until they build something large enough to actually become visible. And
well,
that's
you
like,
can engineer those too. To do
huh?
You can engineer those, I think, to do whatever task they want to do. Very deadly, because they could put all that in vaccines.
I was just going to mention,
do you guys remember that Stargate show where the nanobots took over?
Oh,
yes.
Well, there's a lot of Star Trek episodes where they had nanobots that controlled the Enterprise's internal computer for a while. Is that the one you're talking about?
No, I was talking about Stargate. Remember the Stargate movies? And they had this...
Oh, the replicators.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what you mean, Larry? The replicators?
Yes.
Yeah, that's
there's
dangerous.
A lot of themes out there in movies that, you know, that I think were... I would guess that these black ops programs are probably doing things like that that we don't know anything about.
Oh, I think so. I think the movies are their way of telling you about what they can do and what they can't do.
Yeah, I think we're way ahead of just the stuff we see and know about. That's all going to be revealed. I mean, my take on this whole thousand-year period where Yeshua is in control of the planet, all this stuff will be available to us. We'll get to do amazing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You want to fly to another star, no problem. You know, you want to learn how this is done, great. You want to, you know, things that that have been completely shrouded in mystery and secrecy will be opened up, and we'll be able to do all those things, and all the bad people will be gone.
Mm-hmm. Speaking about bad people, and you were in Israel, and we have this developing, what I would call a triad, and Larry knows about this, of America, Israel, and Saudi Arabia. And it's getting kind of interesting because the Lebanon situation, they were saying war could come up about in an hour or so. You know, just it's going to start.
I've talked with Dan Gordon about this before, and Dan says that Lebanon has some 200,000 rockets aimed at Israel. And I think if, you know, once they start firing those, if they do, there's not enough Iron Dome missiles to stop that many rockets. So I think Israel would basically get tough and not for its own survival. They would probably go in there and make mincemeat out of Lebanon if they had to, if Hezbollah was going to do that. But Hezbollah is financed by Iran.
Right. And didn't they fire a missile over into Saudi Arabia the other day? And threats
of
more missiles?
That was from Yemen. Yeah, Yemen fired a missile into Riyadh. And I don't understand why they're doing that. There's some connection with Iran, apparently. And I don't know why there's all of this instability, and yet there's all of these indictments and people that are being arrested in Saudi Arabia, princes, and this kind of thing. It's just unprecedented. I mean, every time I open up the news and read it, I'm going, are you kidding? I mean, it's just unimaginable what's going on over there. It's just like really interesting. Yet I wouldn't feel worried about going to Israel. I felt like I've never really felt, you know, I figured that if it's my time to go, it's my time to go. But if I'm supposed to be there to do something, then I'm not going to worry about it. I'm just going to do what I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, here in America, like, you could go to church and get shot now.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I think there's a tie between the purge in Saudi Arabia. There's a naval purge going on here. And from what I can gather, it's all related back to the 9/11 attack. And that Trump has evidently was shown some stuff from some people who cooperated with him in the NSA or the CIA, and he took that information he had over to Crown Prince, and then almost immediately the purges begin.
Yeah, I mean,
so,
I think that it's the late Jim Mars wrote a book about it that it's an inside job. I don't know how much the Saudis were involved other than pawns in the game of the whole thing. I really think that the whole Bush administration of that time was corrupt because we're seeing now these false flag situations where they blame it on some other country, or they mm-hmm. send everybody out on a training mission at the same time that real event is taking place, and so everybody's confused. Is this real, or is this part of the training op, or what's going on? Everyone's confused, and they coordinate those times together. And there was some talk about there being an EMP test within the last few days. I don't know, except for the fact that my internet has been screwy for the past week. I've had to restart my system every 3 or 4 hours because it just goes to zero and won't work anymore. And I have really fast internet here. And yet it comes up as outages. You know, there's like internet outages. And
well,
I don't know what's causing it. But
yeah,
so,
go ahead.
I was just saying, I think it would behoove everyone to be aware that you may not have power if they do this, or if it's done intentionally, you might not have power for a week or two at a time, and you need to prepare yourself for that. And there's easy ways you can do that now. It used to be much harder than it is now to prepare for something like that. Because now there's these little LED lights that you can have in your house that, you know, you can charge them with a USB port, and you could, if you had to, you could charge them in your cigarette lighter in your car if it came down to that, because they hardly take any juice and they last for hours. And then there's now there's inverter generators, which are half the size of the former gasoline generators.
Mm-hmm.
Honda makes them, and Ryobi makes one that's even cheaper. Works just as well. And they'll put out a couple thousand watts, which is enough to keep you from losing all the food in your refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll use a gallon of gas like every 4 or 5 hours. They just sip the gas. So if you have extra gas and you have one of those, you can do great while everyone else is losing all of their food that they've stored and everything else. So, I mean, these are not terribly expensive things to do, and they're just sensible. Because we can't really trust our government right now. Trump, I think, is doing a great job considering what he has to deal with. And the DNC has proven to be completely corrupt and completely insane in what they're doing. And more stuff keeps coming out on Hillary and Bill. It's like it's just the whole Clinton Foundation is just a complete disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like... But this is something I wrote about a year ago from a string in a chat room where an FBI agent apparently got into the chat room and started answering normal people's questions and said all of this a year ago. And now it's all happening.
I was going to ask you, Richard.
I think it was a real chat.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Richard, before we run out of time here shortly, I know the Tor code, a lot of information, you know, is kind of quiet right now, but, you know, I know y'all had the information about Trump and how that all worked and, you know, trying to belay some kind of deal that, you know, was against him. Is there any more news or Tor code information on Trump recently that has came out from the Tor codes?
Not on Trump recently. I could probably ask Glazerson if he could look up and see if there is anything more. But Trump has been compared to King Cyrus, and it came up in the codes in a pretty straightforward table. The thing that Glazerson got really excited about was he keeps looking up my company name. I don't ask him to do this. He keeps looking up Pinlight. And he finds, you know, there's this table he did for me a long time ago where it said Pinlight, and then it had Torah codes right next to it. And then underneath that it said Ephod, 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 which is what we were talking about earlier tonight. And then in the plain text under all that it says, we'll show the deeds of God to the world. But then in that same table he discovered the word breastplate.
Huh.
And he said it was every four letters. Now, that's significant. When you can find a word in the same context as the other word, ephod, and finds that connected to pin light and Torah codes, then I'm wondering, okay, are we supposed to find the ephod? You know, will pin light get to show that to the world? I would just, I don't know. I would get really excited if that actually happened, but, you know, I'm hoping it does.
How do people reach you, Richard? Yeah. We got about 4 minutes left.
There's the whole Torah Code film is up. If you have Amazon Prime, you can watch it for free now. It's up on Amazon. Just type in Torah Code and you'll see all the different versions of it. And there's also a new 3-hour behind-the-scenes version that's free that you can watch. It's basically unedited. It's just the outtakes of all the rabbis and professors saying whatever's on their mind, which is kind of interesting to some people. And that's available, or you can go to my website, which is pinlight.com, or if you're interested in the whole Torah Code thing, you can go to endtodarkness.com, endtodarkness.com, and that will take you to all the Torah Code stuff. And eventually, as I'm able to talk more about what's going on in Israel, I'll post some of that stuff. And then currently we're doing a Best of Watchers film, which should be out by Christmas time. We'll have, like, everybody's favorite stuff from the 11 DVD series whittled down to one DVD, so you can just get the essence of everybody's favorite things. I'm editing on that even as we speak.
That sounds exciting. Larry, got any other questions you want?
I was trying to remember, anything you just want to bring up, Richard, something we haven't asked you. There's a couple of minutes, I guess, here. Anything you especially want to talk about?
Oh, well, only that since I've been working on this Best of Watchers film, it has reminded me of all of the adventures that we've gone on, L.A. and I together, doing all these various things, and it's a 7-year trek. I mean, this was like a long sort of deal, and I'm thinking this DVD is going to be a couple hours long just to be able to handle everything. But it will be, for example, the segment on alien implants took parts of Watchers 7 and Watchers 8 to finish that, and all of it will be cut together on this disc, so you can just watch the whole story of how this implant came out and how it was tested and everything, which I think is kind of cool to actually see it all in one chunk instead of having to load two discs to see the whole story. And, you know, there'll be stuff about the Kimbergash UFO and the Catalina segment and Robert Salas's abduction and Howard Storm's near-death experience and the black-eyed children, and all of this stuff. It'll all be in the Best of Watchers. So I'm not trying to plug it really hard here, but I do think it will be a pretty cool show.
Well, I think something like that is necessary. People are, I don't know, they don't seem to be able to, get out of their mental cage and, you know, actually believe or be convinced that this stuff really is real, that the paranormal of the world is very real, and that people really are experiencing
real.
All kinds of things.
We are, and it's actually because of the fraudulent uses of it that I see all over YouTube, and there's stuff that people put out there that's not true, that's and when we had the fairy, and when we were, you know,
we weren't sure
what it was, we proved that it was fake. We went, came back and proved it. So it's not like we're trying to lie to people. If we don't know the answer, we say that, and we say we're still working on it. We'll come back and show you what we've discovered you know, is the mm-hmm. is the truth to it. Well, if there's any way to prove it, we will. But it's one reason why I've been intrigued with Israel, because I think these things have to be found. And if they are, then there's physical proof that people can see, oh, here's the actual ephod mentioned in the book of Exodus, or here's the Ark of the Covenant, or here's the, you know, if those things are actually found, those would be huge discoveries with monumental impact that would change
yes.
the world.
Okay,
and
well, we're out of time, so
that's it with that.
Thanks a lot, Richard, for coming on, and thank you, Larry. We'll try and get you back on here as soon as we can. So,
thank you, Stuart. It's very kind for you guys to ask me to be on.
Okay. Thank you, Larry, for coming on, and thanks again, Richard, and we'll close her up. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Night.